Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Anna Marie Cox, and congratulations, you are being rescued.
Hi, I'm Daniel Dresner. Are we not still friends, Anna?
Welcome to Space the Nation, where we look at science fiction through the lens of defensive realism and Fitt's Law of Entry-Based Systems. Today, we will be talking about Rogue One, a Star Wars story. And in the next few weeks, we'll be talking about The Moon is a Harsh Mistress for our Cannon Fodder episode, and Gattaca. We have lots of other ideas. We have a big, long list that if you are a patron, you can contribute to. If you subscribe to our newsletter, you'll get a link to it every week. Our newsletter is The Debris Field, and you can subscribe to it at tinyletter.com/spacethenation. Dan, what am I missing here? What am I missing in our introduction?
I do think you're missing the fact that the other thing you could do is actually decide to become a patron. So if you go to patreon.com/spacethenation, you can become a patron, which of course gives you early access to episodes, gives you access to the Discord channel, our monthly AMAs. Really, it's just a whole cornucopia of things.
It is. And I always remind people who aren't members, the Discord is really fun. It's a great community. So I think you should become a patron on that basis alone. You can also give us suggestions via Twitter, where Dan and I are all too often present. I am at Anna Marie Cox. He is
at Dan Dresner.
And Dan, before we get started, how are you?
I'm good. It's like spring here. So like, you know, I like that. It's, you know, getting warmer. That's a nice thing. I also saw that weird-ass Nicolas Cage movie last night, which was...
And?
Let me put it this way. If you watch the Nicolas Cage movies in the 90s, if you've watched Con Air and Face Off and The Rock, you're going to enjoy this movie. If you haven't watched those films, you're going to enjoy it slightly less. But also, you will like it, Anna, because Pedro Pascal is also in it, and he is... freaking adorable. It's just he's just ridiculously.
He's from San Antonio, which I didn't know that until
recently. I did not know that. Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Cuz he stirred up quite a controversy by saying that San Antonio has better breakfast tacos than Austin.
Fighting words.
Yeah,
Ben, I was going to say, wow, I did not realize that could be a triggering for a conflict. that's amazing. How are you, Anna?
You know, I'm doing okay. I shared in the newsletter that, you know, my dog is very reactive. Mhm. Exley, named after Fred Exley, who was kind of a troubled soul himself. Mm-hmm. And Exley bit someone.
Oh, no.
And
I'm so sorry.
So we have, my trainer suggested we just roll back all new things in his life. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like we're isolating him, but just no new people, no new places for a while. And that's how I like to live. So it's all good.
Excellent. Very good.
I'm like, all right, no new people, no new places. Let's do that.
Yes.
And you know what, Dan, we're talking about Rogue One.
Right.
You suggested it.
Yes.
Why are we talking about Rogue One?
I sensed a presence, Anna, that we had not engaged with ever on this podcast. And we're probably going to engage with it again, because the thing about the Star Wars universe is that there is clearly stuff that would apply for cannon fodder, and also stuff that would definitely apply for schlock and awe. But I was curious to watch this film in particular, as my memory of it was that, like, I was actually amazed watching it, that, like, my God, you created an entire movie to answer what was the biggest plot hole in the original Star Wars. And, like, address the plot hole reasonably well. Like, I you know, that was fine.
I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I tried to come up with other movies you could make based on a plot hole.
Yeah, so, like, what do you got,
Anna? My favorite one, I have a couple, but my favorite one is a movie that explains why the alien ship in Independence Day can be operated by a MacBook. And it would be like there's a distant common ancestor, maybe, or Steve Jobs is an alien.
I just realized there is a movie like this that exists, which is Prometheus and Alien Covenant.
I think those get a pass because they're not answering plot holes.
That's true. Okay. It's more those are origin stories. Those are origin story films. That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
So I do like the idea of Steve Jobs being an alien.
That is good.
It's a prequel that explains, like, why the Mac OS spans galaxies.
Yes.
But speaking of OSs, we're going to talk more about those later.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
This
a
is
fun
the
part
movie...
of this podcast will be operating systems and data storage discussion.
It's
important.
This is all about how many bars do you get if you're in the Empire? Like, that's an also crucial thing.
That's a good way to describe, like, the central conflict in this movie. Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh my God, that would have been such a funny, like, tie-in.
I
the Verizon guy walking around.
I'm not lying, Anna. I think if this movie had been made in 2026, that commercial would exist.
Yeah.
Is all I'm saying. Like, that's how much, like, the sort of cross promotional. Because I don't know about you. I remember being surprised because Marvel's done this now. Like, there were, like, when the TV shows and with
Spider-Man,
like,
they have actual characters.
They have actual characters in ads, which I was actually a little surprised that they, like, went that far. Because, like, they don't need the money. But, like, whatever. Like,
capitalism, Dan.
Yeah, I know.
It's rapacious. Okay, we have actually, I think, a challenging Chekhov's What's It section this week.
Yeah, there was not.
Because there's not a lot of consistency in the movie. That's actually another problem.
I mean, I put down Jin's necklace, which is, I think, a kyber crystal. But, like, even that's not really, like, the necklace itself doesn't play a vital role later in the film. It's just that you do see recurring, like, you know, looks at it. But I can you have anything? Like, you know.
I was sort of like, Chekhov's, what's it, is Chekhov's Cassian's conscience? I mean, that's a long kind of tangle of words, but that's the only thing I could come up with. It's like his conscience starts to bother him, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, that just sort of a testament to, like, you could say simplicity of the plot, or you could say straightforwardness.
Or it's also that, like, the things that would otherwise be Chekhov's what's it in this film are, hey, do you see this from the Star Wars universe?
It's all fan service.
Chekhov's what's it is fan service. Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. And we should talk about that when we get later. But, like, your favorite fan service versus what my favorite fan service was.
Let's do that.
But Anna, let's get to the story behind the story. Could you tell us about this underdog little art film?
Yes, this underdog film was the second highest grossing film of 2016, even though I believe it was released in December.
It was, yes.
It earned over $1 billion worldwide. And I have a note to myself that this movie is a celebration of capitalism. Not that most tentpole movies are, I guess. But this one is the one that I did keep thinking about, like, this is based on action figures to a certain extent, right?
Perhaps, although, I mean, we'll get to this at the very end. There is one way in which this movie is not exactly it is a celebration of capitalism, but spoiler alert for those of you who haven't watched it, by killing off everyone.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason the movie
wait,
works.
Though.
Yeah.
Prequels.
Oh, right. There we go.
Because
oh,
IP is a flat circle.
Okay, fair
enough.
And
spoiler alert, there is a prequel in the works.
Oh, are you serious?
show based on Cassian called One of the Planets. One of the nine planets we visit in this movie.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember which one.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a prequel in the works.
But I mean this sincerely, like, this is a better film than I think it had any right to be, even though there's a lot of stuff we're going to make fun of. But, and I think one of the reasons is that in the end, they kill everyone off, and like it therefore answers the question
of
why does no one talk about
this? It is sort of satisfying that way.
Yes,
right?
It is,
like,
yeah.
Weirdly satisfying.
Yeah.
I should tell you,
yes,
this movie went through a lot of edits and reshoots.
Oh, okay.
To get to this point.
All right, let's hear it.
First of all, the original script, they didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
Because the writer thought that Disney wouldn't allow it to have a sad ending.
So the writer expected capitalism, the capitalist imperative to dominate
capitalism.
It. Yes.
And then they actually had a finished movie and did a trailer in April 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And then they reshot a bunch. And there's a rumor that over 40% of it is reshot.
Good Lord.
And there, if you look at that original trailer, there's scenes in the original trailer that are not in the movie.
No, I remember. Like, isn't it, like, one of the lines I actually liked was that, you know, doesn't, like, Jin say at one point, this is a rebellion, isn't it? I rebel. I remember that or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And yeah. In fact, that's a really interesting observation and an important one, because people have tried to reconstruct what the changes were. There hasn't been a lot of discussion
mm-hmm.
from Disney about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the big shift was to make Jin less of a rebel.
Ah, okay.
That she's just an independent. She's more like Han Solo.
Right.
She's just like rebellious in general,
mm-hmm.
and she's like anti-authority.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they chose to soften this for a reason, which is that they definitely softened it. And
yeah.
By doing that, they softened kind of what should be a central tension,
mm-hmm.
and you actually mentioned this
yeah.
a little, which is like, how extreme should rebellions be?
Yes.
The movie kind of gets to the edge of that question.
Yes, it's there, but it's background. It's never yeah. really wrestled with. But it's interesting.
Yeah.
I will say, like, to the extent that it's there, it's actually
and they And that's now intentional. They took it out.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
that might be Disney.
That's, yes, fair enough. Okay. That should be the motto. Disney, we have no problem killing off characters, but discussions of rebel politics? No. That's no. Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can see in the movie where it would have happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, because Cassian sort of represents that. I mean,
yeah.
no, sort of. He does represent that, but
yeah.
he's background.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that's kind of interesting. I will have more on this in the newsletter.
Excellent.
I wanted to keep it kind of short because there's so much I could say mm-hmm. about all of this, but we need to get to the plot.
We do. All right, let's get to Act One. This is a bad idea. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That's not the right opening. This is what happens when there's no opening crawl. I couldn't resist that. I'm sorry.
Oh, wait, I'll interrupt real quick.
Yeah.
Totally intentional.
Yes.
The decision was made by Disney, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That all of the quote-unquote anthology films,
mm-hmm.
like Han Solo,
yeah,
Star
yeah.
Wars Story,
right.
none of them have crawls.
Right. Totally fair. It's not the main saga. But a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, the Galactic Empire is consolidating its control. Military Director Krennic seeks out former Imperial scientist Galen Erso to jumpstart work on the Death Star, a space station as large as a small moon with the power to destroy a planet. I'm sure this is all very new to all of our listeners. Galen agrees to return, but only after Krennic kills his wife, Lyra. Before that, Galen sent his daughter, Jin, to stay with Rebel leader Saw Gerrera. Flash forward 15 years. Rebel intelligence officer Cassian Andor learns of an Imperial shuttle pilot who has defected and has news about the Empire making a planet killer. The rebels free a now adult Jin Erso and ask her to go with Cassian and the reprogrammed Imperial droid K2SO to Jeddah to make contact with the now estranged rebel leader, Saw Gerrera, who is busy interrogating that pilot in a very creepy way.
This is very strange part of
yeah.
the plot.
Yeah.
The mechanics here.
Yeah. Anyway, the hope is that they will exfiltrate Galen Erso. Just before they depart, however, Rebel General Draven tells Cassian to totally ignore those orders and kill Galen instead. Once at Jeddah, Cassian and Jin learn the Empire is removing kyber crystals from the Holy City to power a new weapon. Those crystals power the Jedi lightsaber, so that can't be a good thing. They are befriended by former Temple Guard Chirrut Imwe and his compatriot Baze Malbus. After a skirmish with some stormtroopers, Saw's men capture our heroes and take them back to his redoubt. Anna, does Cassian killing his informant early on qualify this film as an attempt at a gritty reboot of the Star Wars franchise?
It's interesting that you would put it that way. I mean, I'm glad we talked up top about this idea that to the extent that the film has a philosophical quandary in it, mm-hmm. it's how far should you go in the service of a good idea?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. How far should you go in the service of equality, of rebellion, of insurgency?
Of the fight against autocracy, yes.
Right. It is a question that the other Star Wars films do not deal with.
No, I would, hold on, I am going to point out The Last Jedi is actually an exception here, but like they don't deal with it well, so like I
they don't deal with it well, yet. And also it is personalized in the character of Luke, right?
Yeah.
And it's also about his anger. It's not about in service of the rebellion.
Oh, no, I wasn't talking about Luke. I was talking about Episode 8, The Last Jedi, when it turns out, like, it's not a great plot, but it turns out, oh, arms merchants fund both the Empire and the Republic, that stuff. But, like, it's such a pat, easy thing that, like, it's not really addressed. Sorry.
Right. But, and again, like, they bring this up with Luke.
Yeah, they do. But it's personalized, but it's, as you say. Yeah.
But it's personalized. Yeah. It's like the personal choice. Am I going to make this about anger? Am I going to make this about an ideal?
Right. It's not Luke deciding, I am fighting for the forces of good, therefore I have to kill this guy.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And this is such an interesting question.
Yeah.
It is somewhat disappointing mm-hmm. that it doesn't really get dealt with, you know?
Yeah. There was promise. And, like, the promise is interesting. You know, I wasn't expecting Cassian to kill that dude. And, like, you... There is something of an arc that he has, but like it's not really. It's half-hearted.
I mean, to a degree, the movie kind of comes down on sure. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Commit atrocities in the name of good. But you know, it's Disney.
Yeah.
I think they couldn't get into it too far.
There we go. All right, let's move to Act Two. Papa, can you hear me? Papa, can you hear me? Rebelling. Sorry. I will explain
Space
why.
Space the Nation now with 100% more singing.
There we go. So, Cassian, Chirrut, and Baze are put in a cell next to, hey, what do you know, the defecting Imperial shuttle pilot Bodhi. Bodhi's not entirely with it, however, as Saw's interrogation techniques have left his brain a bit scrambled.
Never brought up again.
Nope. I will say, he's scrambled in that scene. By the time we get to Act 3, he's totally fine. So just...
Totally fine.
Yeah, interesting. Bodhi does, however, remember that Galen is on the planet Edu. Jin and Saw catch up, and Saw shows Jin the holographic message Galen gave Bodhi. Galen says he intentionally created a structural flaw in the Death Star that makes it beatable, and tells Jin to go to Scarif, which is where the Imperial Archive is located, and just grab those technical plans. Meanwhile, on the nearly complete...
Couldn't just give the technical plans.
I'm going to get to that, Anna.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah. Meanwhile, on the nearly completed Death Star, Grand Moff Tarkin, aware of the defector, tells Krennic to test out the weapon on Jedha's holy city. It's a successful test. Cassian, Jin, and the others barely escape the shockwave from the blast while Saw Gerrera stays behind to die. Tarkin congratulates Krennic, but uses Bodhi's defection and the leak coming from Edu as a pretext to take command of the Death Star. Cassian, K2, Jin et al. Head to Edu. Cassian says he's going to recon the base, but intends to in fact carry out his orders and kill Galen. At the last second, however, he decides not to pull the trigger. Jin makes her own way independently to the base landing pad, just as Krennic arrives and kills all the engineers, just for the hell of it, frankly. At that exact moment...
I mean, that is a way to stop a leak.
It is, in
theory. Sort
of. Yeah, it's not the
best way.
Because
he doesn't actually kill the person who did the leak.
Right, I was going to say, even though he has admitted that he was the source of the leak. So, yeah. Not Krennic's best decision-making. At that exact moment, however, rebel fighters ordered by Draven to attack because they fear that Cassian's ship was destroyed, strike the facility. Galen is mortal...
Sorry, I have to jump in again.
Yeah.
The communications protocols in this movie...
Yeah, there's a lot of, like...
There's a scene where he's, like, where I think it is Bodhi that says, stop the attack, and the guy's like, too late, they're already there.
Right.
I'm like, wait, you just communicated instantaneously from the planet surface.
To Yavin 4, but, like, Yavin 4 can't order the pilots? Yes, it's...
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. this movie is entertaining, but it is clear they reverse engineered all of the technical stuff for why someone could do something and why someone couldn't do something. And we're going to get to a lot of this once we get to Scarif. But yeah, that's...
Oh yeah.
Just not good. Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, rebel fighters ordered by Draven to attack because they fear Cassian's ship was destroyed, strike the facility. Galen is mortally wounded and dies in Jin's arms as Jin keeps saying the word Papa over and over again, which is hence the title for this, before she escapes with her group on board a stolen Imperial cargo shuttle. So, Anna, I have two questions. First, in both The Force Awakens and in this film, there are Imperial defectors, and they play an important part in the plot. And this is a really super exciting concept, and yet what I find legitimately puzzling is that neither film delves into this idea, and I think the defector characters are treated badly as a result. Second, as you said, Galen sends a holographic message to Jin. What I want to know is why Galen didn't send along with that message. I don't know. The fucking plans in the first place!
In the universe of the movie.
Yes.
We could posit they just have a bunch of, like, uncompressed GIFs.
So, like, you're saying it's just too large a data file to put
just
on
just too large a data file. So they have to go to Scarif.
I'm sorry, right? That's bullshit. It's just total bullshit. You know it, I know it, but yes.
Of course. I mean, they've got to have invented data compression at this point, right?
Yeah.
Like,
they could fly at light speed. You would think that, like, they would be able to actually compress data.
And he's the guy who, like, designed it.
Right.
So he doesn't even have to give the entire set of plans.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Because, like, in A New Hope, when they show the setup,
mm-hmm.
they just show the setup. They don't show, like, the entire schematic of the Death Star. Like, all of the details and, like, little bits and pieces.
Right. Honestly, if anything, you don't want to show them. Like, this was the thing that I kept thinking of. You don't want to give the Rebels the entire technical readout of the battle station. You just want to show them the important stuff. Like,
right.
if you give them all the technical readouts, that's, like, I don't know, giving someone, like... Don't make the Rebel engineers work for it. Just say, hey, right here, that's where you fire the thing, and it'll work.
Also, to judge by A New Hope, the illustration there, you could draw it on a cocktail napkin. Like,
this is where I have some sympathy for the film here, because this is the problem in both the Star Trek universe and the Star Wars universe, where they're trying to connect things where technology has advanced considerably and connect it as a prequel to something that was made back in the 70s when no one clearly imagined that the technical stuff would be better. So, like, that's something I'm willing to forgive the film for, but not giving the plans in the first place.
You're right. That's a tactical thing that they don't really explain.
They don't.
Away.
Yeah.
Because also, Bodhi, they could have the plans air-gapped, and Bodhi physically transmits the plans.
Exactly. Yes.
Right? So the data file could be enormous.
Yeah.
They're not having to, like, do a data transfer over the air.
I keep wondering, like, does the Galactic Empire have a cloud? I mean, like, you know.
Well, cloud storage, I think, is pretty dangerous.
Yeah,
I mean,
fair.
And there is so much detail available on the internet about this.
If the prequels is all about the taxation of trade routes, this film is all about data storage and availability. This is, like, you know, and encryption. Like, that's what it is.
And, you know, given the fan base of the Star Wars movies, people have thought about this a lot.
They have.
I got down such a deep rabbit hole last night. I actually eventually wound up reading an academic paper about UI.
Oh my God, seriously?
Which is where I got the Fett's Law entry-based computing.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, that law has to do with how much movement is required to complete an action.
Oh, okay. Very good.
It's the idea that being able to use your keyboard and not have to use the mouse to press enter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the more efficient way to do it. And there's an actual, like, schematic, like, you know, equation for time and whatnot.
Fair enough.
But, yeah, that's the rabbit hole I went to.
Listeners, this is true. Because Anna kept texting me all of these articles. Yes.
I didn't text you the academic ones. The academic one I wound up getting to was sort of spun out of the fact that, we'll get to it, I know, but at Scarif, like, of all the various bad data platforms. And there's, like, multiple.
Oh,
right?
So many, yes.
The fact that they have to use these mechanical arms to get the VHS cassette out Fit, Mr. Fit would be very upset.
We'd all be very upset, Anna. Yes, that's, yeah, that's
fine. Okay. Right. I want to get to talking more about the data storage.
Okay, so we need to move on. Yes, all right. Yeah. So act three, you know what this film needs? A council meeting. Krennic goes to Mustafar to meet with Darth Vader and explain the Death Star's attack on Jeddah, which has created some super awkward issues within the Imperial Senate because the Imperial Senate was told that it doesn't exist. The ambitious Krennic requests an audience with the Emperor, but Vader instead orders him to make sure that Galen Erso hasn't compromised the Death Star. Krennic heads for Scarif. Speaking of which, our favorite rebels meet with the Rebel Alliance Council, I guess, to urge action. There's bickering! Some urge an attack on Scarif to get the Death Star plans, others don't believe the Death Star exists, and others argue that surrendering would be cool. Despite Jyn's entreaties, the Alliance chooses to do nothing in the face of such discord.
I have a feeling there might be some IR in that.
Yeah, there's a little bit. Cassian, Jyn, and the Rebel Scooby Gang decide to take matters into their own hands. They commandeer the stolen Imperial shuttle because, sure, that's a super easy thing to do. You just grab, walk right onto the shuttle. No security protocols whatsoever.
These thoughts also crossed my mind.
Yeah. They rename it Rogue One and head to Scarif to get the plans. They manage to bluff their way through the shield gate that protects Scarif and lands on the planet. Jyn, Cassian, and K2 look for the plans, while the rest of the team fan out to wreak havoc and cause a distraction. Krennic, who has also just arrived to tie up loose ends, sees an explosion and orders the garrison to mobilize. Anna, we obviously know how the film actually ends, but in the counterfactual world where the Rebel fleet does not arrive in support, what exactly was Cassian and Jyn's exit strategy? This seems like a super bad plan, is all I'm saying.
It is a bad plan.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as extremists, though... Like, this is pretty in keeping with their life philosophy.
I guess.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, just go and fuck shit up is something that insurgents do.
Right, but in this case, the goal is not to fuck shit up. The goal is to actually get the plans.
No, what I'm saying, but if they didn't get the plans and they just fuck shit up.
They just fuck shit up, like, okay, yeah.
That would be... something.
Okay.
That would be a success, right?
Yeah.
And also, they don't know how hard it's going to be, I think. My suspicion is they think this is a simple heist.
I see.
Right?
They think it's an Ocean's 11 movie, not an actual war
film.
Yeah,
they think it's an Ocean's 11 movie, not like a Star Wars movie with data storage issues.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Of all the problems in this movie, like, that is not the one that cracks my top 10.
That's fair. It's just that this was one of the things we're watching again, and I was like, what happens if no one else shows up? Because, like, you're not going to be able to pull this off. That was all I kept thinking watching it. Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's finally get to Act 4, the big battle over data storage. The Alliance intercepts Imperial reports about the raid on Scarif. Admiral Raddus and the rest of the Rebel fleet head to Scarif for support because, sure, the decision not to do that was like so 20 minutes ago. Jyn and Cassian make their way to the Central Archive. K2SO covers for them and sacrifices himself so Jyn and Cassian can retrieve the data. Honestly, this was actually the most touching death in the entire movie.
Well, it's Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk, yes. Alan Tudyk.
Tudyk?
From Firefly.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he always has the noble deaths. That's like
That is his shtick now.
Niche.
It's him and Sean Bean, basically, yes. They should be in a movie together where they both die. The Rebel fleet arrives and Imperial forces close the gate after only a few TIE fighters head down to provide air support. Jyn and Cassian find the plans but are ambushed by Krennic, who shoots Cassian. The Rebel fleet arrives and Imperial forces close the gate after only a few X-Wing fighters head down to provide air support. Jyn and Cassian find the plans but are ambushed by Krennic, who shoots Cassian. The rest of the team dies from stormtrooper fire, but not before Chirrut is able to flip a very important master switch that allows Bodhi to contact the Rebel fleet. Bodhi tells them they need to take down the shield gate because otherwise Scarif's Wi-Fi is like barely one bar and there's no way to transmit the plans in under 5 hours.
You know what I would have loved?
What?
Is like a little spinning wheel of death thing. Like in the somewhere in the Rebel Alliance, like they're just waiting for it to download.
Yes,
like they're just like watching like the progress bar.
Honestly, what I wanted at one point was for Bodhi to look at whatever he was trying to do transmit and like see how many bars did he have.
Yeah,
something along those lines as well.
And then, the Rebels on the other hand are like fuck because who has not like needed to download something and it takes a while. Like, usually this is the case when, like, you're downloading something and someone is with you and, like, you're needing to show them something.
Right, you ought to show them a video, and of course it takes friggin' forever for it to actually
Right, but,
process.
Like, to, yeah. the tension, you can ring. Waiting to load.
Also, like, there's a Vice article that I think you have to put in the newsletter on this that points it out. The most absurd element about this is that the actual archive data is tape.
It
looks like
a
reel to reel. Yes. Okay. We will. Let's get to the rest. Okay. We'll get
to
the rest of this.
Let's just finish this up.
So Jin transmits the plans via the base's antenna, completing it moments before the Death Star enters orbit above Scarif, but just after Cassian shoots Krennic while he's monologuing. Admiral Raddus uses a Corv.
He has a cape too. I'm surprised like he doesn't get the cape caught in.
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh, that would have been great. Oh, he should have gotten the cape caught in that goddamn like archive thing that we see.
Yeah.
Admiral Raddus uses a Corvette to obliterate two Star Destroyers, which in turn crash into the shield generator, deactivating the shield, and finally allowing the plans to be downloaded in the Rebel, ship. Tarkin uses the Death Star to destroy the entire Scarif base, killing Cassian, Jin, Krennic, and everyone else on Scarif. As the Rebel fleet jumps into hyperspace, Vader's Star Destroyer arrives, blocking the escape of Raddus' ship. Vader boards the Rebel command ship and force kills a whole bunch of Rebel troops in a legitimately badass attempt to regain the schematics. A starship manages to escape with the plans on board, however, and now, Anna, you know the rest of the story. I'm sorry, I had to end with that, because like that is how this whole thing feels. All right, Anna, I did like, there's a lot of fan service and a lot of callbacks in this film.
Long list.
There's Vader, there's Jimmy Smits who plays Bail Organa, I believe.
There's some canteen characters that show
Yeah, there's a I few mean, of like, those, yeah.
There's a lot of fan service,
yes.
Just a ton. I mean, this movie could be called Rogue One, a fan service.
Rogue One, a fan service story. So some of it I legitimately like. I thought they had just enough Vader in this film. They didn't need any more of it. It was nice seeing Jimmy Smits. He doesn't have a ton to do, but it was a nice connection to the prequels.
It's just nice to see Jimmy Smits.
Yes, exactly. He's a good actor. What I legitimately loved was that you see red and gold leaders from the original Star Wars, and you also see Luke's predecessor as Red 5. That was awesome.
When I did my deep rabbit hole, by the way, the stuff that I read, nobody's sure if that's CGI or not for red and gold leaders.
Oh, I think the answer to...
Or if it's original footage.
My understanding is that it actually was original footage. I remember reading this when the film came out, that they apparently had original footage that they obviously hadn't
can't
used
believe
in the film.
Wikipedia might have been wrong.
Yeah. That's my understanding, at least. Because also it's the same voice, or maybe they use CGI, but the voices are definitely those actors who played them. So that's true. All that said, there was also the CGI characters of Tarkin and, very briefly, Princess Leia. And how do I put this, Anna? Did those work or were those super creepy?
We have an uncanny valley problem,
yeah.
I think. And also it's interesting because I think if they had made that today, the CGI would be so much better just in the past 6 years.
Yeah, it's possible.
I mean, the progress we've made on deepfakes, has been incredible. And I think... it's also unnecessary. That's what really bothered me. You just don't need him.
No, this way, you never needed to see Tarkin's face. You could have had Tarkin.
You could have had him on the radio. You could have had him voice.
Yeah, and I think that would have worked. You needed Tarkin there because of what the Death Star is going. The Leia one, I remember watching at the very end and saying, oh, for God's sakes, you didn't need that.
What I would have appreciated more is like something that they apparently did, right? Which is cutting in footage.
Yeah, that would have been better.
Yeah.
I agree.
Like, that actually could have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because they'd probably clean it up digitally and stuff.
Right.
So it'd have a look that fit in with this movie. But
right.
you would see Carrie Fisher, rest her soul.
Yeah.
It's been a whole episode, I think, since I said Adorno and Baudrillard. So I have to mention them now.
Please do.
I'll just use this as a sort of preview of my whether or not there's a critique of capitalism in this movie. The familiarity of these characters is something Adorno would have predicted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that they go through this trouble to recreate them rather than rely on the imagination of the viewer.
Mm.
Because you can't let the viewer imagine. Because that's a kind of freedom. That's a kind of like a creative control that capitalism doesn't like. You have to like spoon feed these narratives and spoon feed these characters. And then, of course, Baudrillard, copy of a copy of a copy. What is real anymore?
There we go.
That, and so on and so on. Matrix.
Yeah. In that sense, It's the Matrix rebooted or whatever the most recent one was. That the, you know, there's a feeling there. Yeah.
You know, Dan.
Yes, Anna?
I have a question.
Please ask away.
Is there IR in this film?
Anna, what do I know? My specialty is just strategic analysis. I'm sorry, when K2 said that, I was like, oh, yeah, Anna knows what's coming during the podcast. So
I thought about you a lot during this.
Oh, actually. Thank you, Anna.
I mean, I was like, oh, there's some, yep, there's some. Yep. There's, I'm going to ask Dan about that. I'll ask about that. And, you know, K2.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And actually, there is a fair amount of IR in this film. I think
there is
a fair amount. And like, and we've said this before. I said this in the last podcast. Like, my theory up until the end of the prequels had always been that the more politics there was in a Star Wars film, the worse the film was. The more interesting the politics, the worse the film. Because like the original trilogy, it's a very simple set of politics. The prequels, actually somewhat arcane politics, but like bad movies. This, I think, like sort of nicely splits the difference in some ways, because there really is interesting politics. The first and most important is that, hey, turns out rebel alliances are fractious. Okay? And like, they actually took the term rebel alliance seriously. There is legitimate bickering going on here between different groups of fighters. You believe that this is a very disorganized, you know, rebellion. And it does help to explain, among other things, why the Empire has managed to persist for so long. And like, there are people who are legitimately pissed at Draven at one point because he did send fighters to attack Edu. And you know what? I'd have been pissed too. Because, like, he didn't consult anyone. There's no, like, obvious chain of command there. It's a problem. There is compartmentalization of information. You know, there is the fact that, like, Cassian knows what his orders are, but he never tells Jin. And, like, you know, there's bickering there as well. And so it's hard to actually fashion an alliance, even with something as bad as the Empire. And in some ways, this ties into what we talked about last week. Alliances are hard, and it's really hard to form them. So you can see why, weirdly, this is a defense of the last trilogy, which it explains why, you know, the New Republic might not necessarily last all that long. So, yeah, fair enough. The second thing in terms of international relations is that even authoritarian states have politics. So there's a tendency, and God knows this is certainly true in sort of modern discourse, there's a tendency to think that if a state is an autocracy or, you know, an authoritarian state, there's no politics within that. You know, like, it's just a leader.
Is that something that people think?
It's not something that you think, Anna.
Okay. All right.
But I would say that, like, it's in the discourse a lot.
Well, I think that the Trump administration did many things.
Yeah.
But one thing it did is disabuse people of the notion that authoritarian regimes were organized.
Right. Exactly. That's a fair... Okay.
But yes, previous to this, previous to the Trump administration, you're correct. I think a lot of people think that that's one of the reasons that authoritarian regimes have some appeal to people, right?
Yeah, it's the notion... Like it goes back to this whole thing. Well, you know, it's literally like...
At least the trains run on time
for Mussolini. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yes. But clearly authoritarian states have politics, and that's one of the interesting things about this film. You see, you know, Krennic and Tarkin constantly jockeying for position. Even Vader is worried about the prospect that the Senate will learn about the Death Star. So, you know.
I'm just having fun thinking about the Empire as the Trump administration.
There we go. Fair enough. A third thing that this movie points out is that war, and this goes to what you were saying, is that war tempts all actors to abandon principles, or abandon principles with respect to the means if they believe the ends are just. And I thought the best example of this was Jin's sort of line about, you know, to Cassian, like, that's how, that's stormtrooper thinking, or essentially, you might as well be a stormtrooper. So it's the one time the film, I think, actually does attempt to wrestle with this idea. As I said, it then walks away, you're right about that, but... But I guess relative to what we've seen before, there is actually at least some light skirmishing about this idea. And so it's interesting.
Yeah, and I liked the moment where Cassian explains why he's doing this.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, that all of those bad actions need to be worth something.
Yeah.
There need to have been a purpose for them, so I'm going to go on this suicide mission with you.
Right, and that, no, I agree. That was actually a great scene where, like, Cassian and all of his compatriots come and say, yeah, we know that the odds are not great, but, like, unless we do this, then everything we've done before isn't worth it. And I also like, the other thing I did like was that when Jin gets on him about, you killed people, I can't believe you've done all this stuff, Cassian actually responds, and I thought this was a good response, of like,
oh, I go ahead.
Yeah, no, Cassian responds with, you don't know what I've had to do. Like, don't tell me, like, I, you know, you've had the luxury of being able to afford not to make choices. I never had that luxury. And I thought, Okay, that's actually a good response.
I really liked that scene, yeah. And also I think Jen was wrong.
Yes.
Like, she yeah. is so clearly in the wrong yeah. to, like, be questioning him on this.
Yeah.
You know? In fact, this, it almost doesn't work as a scene. I mean, I'm blanking on the actor's name, the guy that plays Cassian.
Although Diego he did a great Luna. Job. Diego Luna.
Diego Luna. Yeah. And he also manages to buck the evil of the pencil mustache.
Like... It's true. It's the Diego Luna exception. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Like, somehow a pencil mustache isn't evil. This is a movie that proves that you can do that.
Yeah.
And his sort of quasi-monologue there, I think, is very powerful. Mm-hmm. But it also feels weird because Jen, it's a doesn't seem genuine for Jen to be making these arguments.
Well, it, leave it this way. I would believe that Jen would have been upset because, remember, she's just learned that Cassian was supposed to
right.
kill her father. So, and had lied to her right. throughout the entire mission. So that's... leave it this way. It's not surprising to me that Jen would be angry and that Jen would, because she was angry, make a bad argument.
Okay, all right.
That's
I guess what I think is interesting is I think that must have been an added scene. Because
yeah,
because if
possible.
She had been a true anti-imperialist... She wouldn't have made that argument. She would have been upset that her father... But you're right. But she only can have that scene if she's not explicitly radical.
Well, she's not explicitly radical. I mean, whatever...
Right, don't say this because... But what we were talking about, the cut scenes and the reshot footage.
Yeah.
That scene, I think, is one of the reshot scenes.
Yeah, I agree.
Because...
Yeah, it has to be. And, like, there was another scene they clearly... With Jin and Saw where they clearly must have reshot it because...
Oh, yeah.
Remember, like, Saw says, you're no longer rebelling. You know, you can't see the Empire and... I think she has a response like, if you don't look up, you don't even notice. And, you know, that was...
Yeah. The way that originally played out,
uh-huh.
it was a bit of a Yoda and Luke scene where it's the you're too angry. It was going to be the, you're so angry, are you really doing this for the right reasons?
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
So.
And then one last thought about this, which is there are some who defend the Empire in our discourse and often embrace the concept of the Tarkin Doctrine. There are conservatives who argue that, you know, the Empire is actually a source for stability, and it's the rebels who are religious zealots trying to upend things. And I have to admit, like, that argument has a little more validity than I think anyone really wants to acknowledge who's not a conservative. But one of the elements of this is this notion of the Tarkin Doctrine, which is the idea that what Tarkin wants is to establish order by all you have to do is, like, demonstrate the power of the weapon, and then, you know, fear will keep the local systems in line, as it were. And we see that actually in this film, because at one point, you know, Tarkin doesn't always want, he's not just hell-bent on destruction. He says at one point, I want a statement, not a manifesto, meaning don't destroy the whole planet, just destroy the city, which is, again, just there are layers of evil is all I'm trying to say. It's interesting. Anna?
Dan.
Is there a critique of capitalism in this film?
Dan, I am capable of running my own diagnostics. Thank you very much. There is a critique of capitalism in this film. I don't know if it's intentional. But get this, Dan.
Yes.
Let me lay this on you.
Okay.
The rebels,
yeah.
they are thwarted by planned obsolescence. Dongles. That is the weapon of the Empire. Dongles.
I love the idea right? of that.
So imagine being a rebel forensic data analyst. How many kinds of drives are you dragging around? How many different dongles? How many different kinds of data storage?
Yeah.
Thumb drives, CDs, mini CDs,
mm-hmm.
tapes.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of fuel you would use just lugging around. Like, this is costly.
It's environmentally unfriendly, frankly.
It's environmentally unfriendly. Yeah. It's costly to the Rebel Alliance, mm-hmm. right? It impedes their motions. Now, is this a problem for the Empire as well?
Mm.
Good question.
Yes.
I think it probably causes them some inconvenience, but that inconvenience is intentional, right? Like, they've planned this.
Mm.
They want to make it difficult to spread the data around, right?
Right?
Yeah. This is control of data.
Yeah.
Much in the same way that Apple makes you keep buying different kinds of, like, inputs, right? Right?
Yes.
Although the better example is, and you can back me up on this, I think I'm recalling correctly that North Korean computers run a North Korean OS.
Yes.
Right? That means they're not compatible with anything else.
That is correct. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And it's sort of, you know, policy via OS, right?
Like, it's code. It's code.
Yeah.
Larry Lessig wrote this book, Code, making this point that in cyberspace, code is governance. So, yes. Yes.
And in Nothing Else, like I was saying, the Empire switching all this shit around forces the rebels to spend precious time and cash at the Apple store or Empire store.
I'm not going to lie, Anna. I can't escape the thought of the Imperial dongle. I just love this idea. And like, that's what the store, like, I have to think all the stormtroopers have a dongle somewhere. You know, it's just, yeah, that's perfect.
Well, the thing is, yeah. And like for them, they know exactly how to, like, they've trained and like, they know how to, you know, switch around through these different data storage systems and entry systems. Mm-hmm. But it's the rebels who have to keep guessing, yeah. Right? I have to kind of like reverse engineer all these things. As I have alluded to, there is so much on the internet about this. There are people who have just really taken seriously like the problems and issues with OS and data storage and all that stuff in the Star Wars, especially in this movie, although it occurs in other movies as well.
But this one, as we said before, the reason this it matters so much in this one is that it is literally what drives the final third of this film. Yeah. And again, it's like, and I want to say, by the way, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's an interesting twist on a heist, right? Yeah. Like, in one level, I admire it, and I would like to, it'd be an interesting movie if the heist was, you had to transmit the data,
right?
The heist isn't physical.
Yeah.
But the things they have to posit in order to make that.
That was the problem. The problem is there is a lot of, and by the way, great action. Like, I mean this sincerely. The last third of this film, the battle sequence on Scarif is legitimately thrilling, particularly the space battle. Mm-hmm. I actually honestly think it's the best, you know, there's a lot of space battles in the Star Wars saga. I actually think this one is the one that I enjoy the most. And I can
apparently some of that is from reshoots, by the way.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the point is that, like, this film has good narrative momentum, and it does build in the last third. But the problem is that when you rewatch it, all you keep thinking is, wait, they have to do what? And so it's all about, and like, they keep having to say, it's the size of the data files. That's the real problem.
Yeah, I know. It's all GIFs, I'm telling you. Like, the Death Star schematics are all GIFs. That's the only way to explain.
I do love the idea that they finally download the files. Like, we've got the download files. There's a cat GIF. Yes, we've got them.
Well, there are other GIFs besides cat GIFs. What I think you're thinking, and all this is also good, that the Death Star schematics are all presented in meme form.
Exactly. Sorry. Yes. Yes. Well, when you say GIF, I think
which
meme,
I also so yes. which would also be hilarious and unexpected to say the least.
Exactly.
Oh wait, Dan, what's that? Boom. Oh my gosh, it's pieces of the planetary shield.
Oh my god, I can't believe that. Oh my god, look at those two Star Destroyers. Whoa, yes.
We've entered the debris field.
We have.
Where we talk about stuff we didn't get a chance to get to before. We have gotten to a lot. Mm-hmm. But surely there's a few things. Dan, what do you got?
Just a few things. First of all, we haven't talked a lot about the acting in this film.
Mm-mm.
And I want to highlight two things which I thought were important. Felicity Jones, who plays Jyn Erso, doesn't have a ton to do, weirdly, in this film. But I did, like, the thing that sold me watching it this time is that when she sees Galen, her father, the holograph, she really, like, breaks down into tears. And it was in a very affecting moment. Like, I actually thought that, like, that one acting moment sells her for the entire rest of the film. And also, by the way, the spectacular Mads Mikkelsen plays Galen Erso. And like,
a good guy. Oh, my God. That was the first note I made
watching
this. Was like Mads Mikkelsen playing a non-bad guy.
But he can be a good guy. He's just... Mads Mikkelsen should be in every film. He's a fascinating
actor. Well, he's amazing.
Yeah.
But like his look somehow translates into like Germanic evil.
Yeah. I mean, he was a great Bond villain. he was a good Marvel villain. Like, there's a reason why like you can do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, just wanted to say that. Also, we should bring up Ben Mendelsohn, who plays Director Krennic.
So good.
He's so good. And he has this, and I don't mean to minimize this, but he has this one weird villain trick that totally works, which is Krennic seems bored through half of this movie. Like, anything that represents a problem for him, he's just irritated. He's never like, you know, occasionally he gets angry, but mostly he's like, you just cost me time. It's incredibly effective as a villain because... The one thing that if you're a rebel or a hero you want to have is at least have the villain acknowledge that you're important. And Krennic doesn't do that. And I think it's an incredibly effective way of like making the audience dislike him. And so, again, props to Ben Mendelsohn on that. Third, I swear to God, that Imperial Archive, you know, where they get the things, all I could think of was like, had they never seen Galaxy Quest? Because, like, it made no sense.
It was the Chompers.
It was the Chompers.
The Data equivalent of Chompers.
Yes, I kept thinking, oh, there goes the Chompers. Yep, yeah, okay. Like, it was just, maybe it was, like, maybe I wouldn't have noticed that if we had not done Galaxy Quest already for Space the Nation, but watching it this time, I was like, yeah, there's the Chompers. Yeah. And then, finally, as I said before, they were right to kill off all the main characters, and I'm glad that the Disney realized that, because to the extent that the film has any weight, that actually is what gives it, you know, some weight, that they've accomplished their mission, but it was a suicide mission. And again, the thing that's amazing is that, like, right after I finished this, I just watched the crawl for A New Hope. Literally, it's like, that's the plot. Like, the first paragraph of that crawl describes this film to a T. It's amazing.
Yeah.
What do you got, Anna?
I kept waiting for Oscar Isaac to come on for some reason. I think I just like Oscar Isaac, but, like, I kept thinking, like, isn't he in this movie? No, he's not.
No, he's wasted in other Star Wars films, Anna. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I thought he was also wasted in this one, yeah. But no. And then besides Oscar Isaac, who should be in a lot more movies just in general, he could be in my living room. I was thinking a lot about the fan service, and I found a list, probably not even comprehensive, mm-hmm. of all the different moments of fan service in this movie.
Okay.
And I thought we'd just go through some of them. Mm-hmm. I noticed some of them and I didn't notice others. Are you ready?
I am ready. Go for
Start.
It.
Start. Blue milk in the first scene.
I didn't even notice blue milk in the first scene. Oh, that's great. Okay. That's fair.
Yep. And of course, then Jimmy Smith's Bail Organa.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. This, they actually do a little, make kind of easy. The Scopes guy that, you know, like when the helmet rebel dude is in a watchtower.
Yeah.
And watches the ship go by. Mm-hmm. That's like the exact same scene.
Oh, yeah. In Yavin. Right, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there's Tarkin,
yeah.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Then there are the two canteen characters in Jedi,
yeah,
which is just weird.
I didn't like that at all. Like, it's like, it's a big galaxy. You don't need to bump into everyone everywhere. You know, no, that didn't work for me.
And of course, because this is Star Wars, they have names.
Mm-hmm.
And those names are Ponda Baba.
Okay.
And Avanza. Avanzan? Ivazan?
Okay.
Ivazan.
Maybe they've... I just want to be clear. You never hear those names in any of the films.
No, of course not. But, like, there is one of the stranger things. But it's not strange. It's just... I mean, because Star Wars has become its own... Like, talk about before there was a cinematic universe.
Right.
There was, like, the cinematic universe of Star Wars. And it's so detailed. And there's the books and the cartoons and everything. A lot of characters get names that were not given names at the point that they were invented.
Fair enough.
Yep. You know? And then there's 9 different planets in this movie, which I noticed because at minute 20, they were on a new planet, and I counted there had already been on 5 new planets by minute 20.
Well, that's something that's also like a different thing about this film, which is they actually say where they are. Like when they show a
yeah.
planet, they actually, you see the name of the planet, which they don't do in the normal Star Wars films.
This is somewhat intentional, by the way, to really get across like the vastness of the Empire.
Right.
So we see planets that have mentioned in other movies, like Mustafar,
right.
which is the Mordor, like
molten lava
planet.
That's the planet where we see Anakin become Vader because he gets injured.
Right.
Yeah.
And there is a moment where the stormtroopers, I actually enjoyed this.
Mm-hmm.
The stormtroopers are chit-chatting
yes.
before they get killed.
Yes.
And they mentioned the discontinuation of the T-15s, which I, of course, assumed must be some kind of data storage.
But no.
No, it is a reference to the T-15 hyperdrive generator, a piece of equipment mentioned in a video game tie-in. There's a lot of obscure Easter eggs here. And, of course, we see C-3PO and R2-D2.
Correct.
Right?
Very briefly.
That's not even an Easter egg. That's just like, here, guys, here. Red and gold leader, of course, you said. And then sort of the end of the movie, I guess you could count that almost entirely as fan service.
Right.
Now, that's a list from the internet. The internet is not always correct.
Anna. Wow.
So are you thinking of anything else that we could add to that as far as fan service goes?
I don't know if this was fan service, but I mean, they clearly are making a conscious decision here. We were talking before about the rebels and the Empire. What's the difference? Having Saw Gerrera constantly have to breathe in, you know, like there's a Vader aspect to him, I think would be the way to put it.
At first, I was like, is he really? Is that ether? Is he getting high? But no, it's some kind of injury.
It was clearly
right?
oxygen. Like, yeah, that was the impression I got. But that's not...
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's any other fan servicing. I think you see... Correct me if I'm wrong. There is one moment where, like, they're in a canteen, and you see, like, the dancer that was in, like, there's a holograph image, a holographic image of...
Oh, yes, 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 the, you're correct.
The
yes.
The rebel dancer in, yes. like, Return of the Jedi.
I don't know if it's a canteen, but it's like somewhere. A, yeah, there's, like, people sitting around yeah. in a quasi-social situation, right. and yes.
Yes.
Yes. Also, aren't they playing that little miniature monster chess game?
It's possible. I don't remember that, but it's possible.
I think yeah. so. Yeah. You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. In the original Star Wars.
The yeah. miniature monster yes, chess yes, game. Yes. Everybody knows. Yes. It probably has a name.
It's the one that Wookiees don't like to lose is the important thing.
That is correct. Yeah. Don't, yeah. Let the Wookiee yes. win. It's a good piece of life advice.
It really is, yeah.
So we're at the end, I think, of our discussion of this movie. We are probably at the beginning of our discussion of the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm.
And I think
we can't ignore
yes,
it.
Yes, we will call on our listeners, particularly those active in the Discord channel. What are the other Star Wars properties you want us to discuss? Because we're going to get to them at some point, but like it's going to take a little while.
Yeah, depends on how, which happens first, the end of this podcast or the heat death of the universe. Sometime in there, we're going to get to other Star Wars properties. I'm actually curious about some of the stuff I haven't gotten into before, like the books and the cartoons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I will say that, and this has become obvious, is that as Star Wars has now gone into television, they've started to take a lot of the animated characters and give them yeah. real-life counterparts. So we saw that in, we've seen that in The Mandalorian, we've seen that in The Book of Boba Fett, and I think we're going to see that in Kenobi, which is coming out very soon.
I know a lot of people liked The Mandalorian, and I just was not, I couldn't get into it. Isn't that weird?
That is a little weird, because like I there were... The Mandalorian had a lot of good stuff in it. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. And then people seem to have hated...
Book of Boba Fett.
Book of Boba
yeah,
Fett.
Yeah, I was one of those...
At least on our Discord.
To be clear, I was one of those people. I did not think it was... Or let me put this way. I hated the first half of it. The second half of it, weirdly, has very little to do with Boba Fett. They just sort of... It's the Mandalorian 2.5, so it's strange.
We will keep talking about this property
yes.
because it's like Marvel.
Yeah.
It is our universe.
Right.
We live in the cinematic universe of Marvel and Star Wars.
The force is literally Star Wars is a force that surrounds all of us. I mean, we can't escape it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Binds us.
Binds us. Sometimes a little too tightly, but yes.
Yeah. But until next time, what should we do, Dan?
Keep this channel open.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.